Welcome, Carolyn. It's great to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, what about the original story, Little Mermaid, prompted you to write a book about it?
Well, I actually really love the original story. I love Hans Christian Andersen. He's very weird and dark and strange. And I wanted to do something with that story, though it was a challenge because it's so strange and dark. I wasn't really sure how to enter it at all. But I figured out that I could do it through the figure of the princess who appears in the original story just very briefly at the beginning and at the end. And she's the one who ends up marrying the prince instead of the mermaid marrying him, but is really not a character at all. So I wanted to go in and explore her character and include the mermaid's perspective and then develop a relationship between the two women. I guess one thing that I like to do with these stories that so often put women in conflict with each other is to explore the relationships and the complications between those two women and make those relationships more central than their relationships with the prince or the male. So,
did you have trepidation about basing your book on the darker version as opposed to the one that we're all familiar with Ariel and the happy ending?
No, the main thing was just that it's such a depressing, strange, but very, very beautiful story that I had trepidation about how to go into it and do something interesting with it. And whereas my last book, Godmother, the Secret Cinderella Story, it was a hard book to write, but ultimately looking at the Cinderella story and being critical of it and looking at the darker side to it the story lends itself to that. Whereas The Little Mermaid is already as dark as you can get, really. So any version I was going to tell would be a little lighter, actually. So, but now I'm having more trepidation, I guess, now that it's already done, in that I've seen a lot of readers' reactions where I'm not sure that how many people are familiar with the original version and what I've actually done with it, so...
Okay. Well, when you were writing the book, did you travel? It's set in Scandinavia, so did you actually travel there before or after or?
Yeah. No. As I was writing the book, I didn't do that, but I tried to look at pictures and things like that and get this kind of gloomy, icy Nordic setting down. But I actually ended up going there afterwards. This fall, I was in Berlin. And decided to go up to Copenhagen and sort of just see where Hans Christian Andersen was from and learn more about him, since I felt like I'd been kind of in his world and in his head for so long. And so I went up to Copenhagen and I went around and with a little video camera with all kinds of Danish people looking at me like I was crazy, but I was videotaping all the little places where he lived. He lived in a bunch of different places in Copenhagen. And I took a train over to Odense. I don't know how to say that, but his hometown on Finn Island, that's about an hour and a half away, and visited the home where he grew up and where he was born and places like that. And went to the big museum there where I learned how truly weird he was.
Tell us a little bit about that. I know he had a very sad love affair of his own, or...
Yeah, from what I can understand, he was just this kind of over-the-top person who was very dramatic and was always kind of swooning over everything and falling in love with everybody, men more privately, women more publicly, but was always having these kind of mad affairs in his mind with people who didn't seem to ever return those affections. And I guess from what we understand, he probably never had sex in his life, though he was committed to pleasuring himself, apparently, and to marking down every time this happened in his journal with some kind of special symbol. Anyway, so he's always heartbroken because no one returned his affections. Apparently, he was considered wildly unattractive. In the pictures I've seen, he looks all right, but I guess for that time, he was you know, he's very tall and lanky, and he had these huge feet and this like big nose, and I guess people just thought he was really unappealing. And apparently his personality didn't help anything. And like he visited Charles Dickens for 5 weeks at one point when he was very famous. And then after he left, apparently Charles Dickens put a sign on his door saying something like, you know, Hans Christian Andersen once spent 5 weeks in this room and it seemed to this family ages.
Wow. So I take it that in his lifetime, his work was not accepted, or he had no success in his lifetime?
No, he became very successful. His work became very successful in his lifetime, but just personally, he didn't seem to have all that much luck. So, and actually when he wrote The Little Mermaid, one of his very best friends, Edward Cullen, was off getting married to a woman, and Hans was so upset by this, because this man didn't return Hans's affections, that he went off to his hometown and wrote The Little Mermaid. So this very sad story about this otherworldly, this wonderful otherworldly creature who longs to be accepted into the human world and just isn't, and is rejected, and the prince doesn't love her and he loves someone else. So I think it's a pretty beautiful way to deal with one's own heartbreak and rejection. But apparently that was a common state for him, even though he became very famous and his stories became very loved in his lifetime. He just didn't seem to be able to attract the kind of love that he wanted.
Wow. Carolyn, you have turned the Disney world upside down with these revelations. Wow. Okay. I was wondering, since you also wrote a book about the Cinderella story, if you've read or had any inspiration from Gregory Maguire and his work in Wicked and Confessions of the Ugly Stepsister.
I actually haven't read those books, probably in part because I was afraid to be too influenced by them, though I understand that my stuff is really different. But I was definitely influenced by and inspired by the idea of going into a classic story and taking a totally new perspective from within it and retelling the story from that perspective. And especially just really well-known stories like The Wizard of Oz or like Cinderella, where to me, these seem like stories we grew up with that are just ingrained in you, ingrained in your blood and bones, you know, these classic stories. And so I think it feels kind of revelatory to go in and recast them from a perspective within it that you don't think about, like the witch in Wizard of Oz or the fairy godmother in the Cinderella story, or in his version, the stepsisters. But just you don't think about those perspectives, and you don't think of the story in terms of those perspectives. So I think there's something really, really cool about doing that and flipping a story over in that way.
And is your next project going to be based on a fairy tale as well?
Actually, I have my first children's book is coming out in late summer, and that is based on a fairy tale. It's this old story about a man who steals a swan maiden's feathered robe when she's bathing in the water in her human form, and ends up taking her home and marrying her and having children. And then one day she finds her robe and flies away. But my story is the story of that child who is now a 12-year-old girl who thinks her mother died when she was little. But then she starts growing feathers and it's totally embarrassing. And she starts wearing a hoodie to school and just feeling like a freak, like most 12-year-old girls do, but she really, really has reason. And then she discovers slowly that her mother was a swan maiden, that she's actually magical. So That's based on a number of fairy tales about the swan maiden. There are also similar tales about selkies and a selkie's sealskin being stolen and her going off to live with humans. So,
and what's the name of that book, that your children's book?
The Next Full Moon, and it's a middle grade book for 8 to 12-year-olds. Oh, but I think my next adult novel probably, I'm probably going to go into a different direction and write about the Weeki Wachee mermaids.
Oh, all right. Now, good. Tell us about this new trend of mermaiding. And I understand there's a mermaid camp, and I myself have been to Weeki Wachee, but for those our listeners not familiar, tell us all about this.
Okay. Well, Weeki Wachee is a live mermaid city in Florida that was built in 1947. And it's just this underwater theater built into the limestone of this natural spring. So, and it was once very glamorous. You'd go down to Florida, you'd be driving on one of the main roads, and you'd get lured over and go into this little theater and watch women behind glass in the water in this natural spring acting like mermaids. And Elvis visited there in 1960, and then I think ABC bought it and made it into this even bigger theater, and girls from all over would come to try out to be a Wikiwachi mermaid, and they were treated like royalty. But then with Disney coming in and the interstate, it's become more of a kind of weird roadside attraction. But visiting there, which I did for the first time a year ago, and then I've been back once since, and I've come to know a lot of these mermaids, especially the former mermaids. These are women who swam there and were mermaids there when they were very young and now are older and have come back to do the alumni shows. So I had lunch, for example, with this woman named Vicky, who's 71 and who is now performing in the alumni in the alumni shows there. And these are the alumni mermaids who have since last year been running a mermaid camp for adult women. Oh. And Wiki has been, I guess they've had camps for little girls for years, but it was this one of the other former mermaids, Barbara Wins, had argued that adult women want to be mermaids just as much as little girls do. And so they finally started the Sirens of the Deep Mermaid Camp last year for adult women, and they have been successful. And I will be going in June, June 11th and 12th. And
now, does that mean you're going to be swimming? You're going to be learning to be a mermaid? Okay.
Yeah. You get makeup put on, you get a photo shoot with a tail on and everything, and then you get in the water and learn some basic moves. You can't do what real Wikiwachi mermaids do because they're scuba certified and they go down deep and then they breathe out of these air hoses that are kind of hidden in the scenery so that they appear very mermaid-like, but I'll get to go in and do some little mermaid moves.
And you told me before that there's a mermaid convention in Vegas this summer.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah, I've been really surprised since I've, and this was after finishing the book, but before it came out, I started delving into this world, and a lot of things have weirdly come to me. Like, for example, when I was about to go to Wikiwachi last spring, randomly 2 weeks before I went, I got an email from a woman named Julie Comenda, who's from Wikiwachi. She's the artist in residence there. Just an email telling me she liked my books and stuff, and I said, well, that's weird, I'm going there in 2 weeks. And she actually met me and my family there and gave us a backstage tour and stuff, and she's the one who introduced me to all these other mermaids. So there have been a few weird things like that, but this convention will be held this August in Las Vegas at the Mirage Hotel, and it's the first one, and it's going to bring together all these tail makers. It's really like the last 10 years that people have started making mermaid tails that you can buy and then you can put on and then you can go swim in them and feel like a mermaid. And apparently I've not done that, but apparently when you're swimming in one, it's, you know, it makes you swim faster and it gives you some extra kind of power, I guess. And so in the past 10 years, there've been more and more tail makers coming onto the scene. And so more and more people are able to go and actually buy mermaid tails, put them on, get in the water, and then so there have been more and more professional mermaids who have created careers as a result. And there's this Hannah Fraser. There was a 2020 special on her last summer, but she's probably the most well-known and the oldest one because she started doing this like 9 years ago, and she's this amazing Australian woman who does deep sea diving and swims in her mermaid tail alongside killer whales and dolphins, and there's some amazing video of her doing this. So she's been an inspiration. So suddenly there are all these people around the world, you know, little pockets of people who are really into mermaiding and who have these kind of mermaid identities for themselves that seem to, you know, provide something magical and beautiful and powerful in their lives that maybe they don't have otherwise. And so now for the first time, there's this convention where a bunch of them will meet up. So all these tail makers will be in the same place, and a bunch of mermaids and mermen will be there. And yeah, it should be pretty interesting.
Oh, I bet.
And one of the things that's going on is that the first night there's this huge pool party where I guess at least a few hundred mermaids and mermen will get into the water with their tails, and they want to set a world record for that. And while at the a staged part of the pool, Hannah Fraser will be there doing some kind of performance, and some other professional mermaids will also be performing. So,
all right. Well, Carolyn, this is a lot of new and really interesting information, and your book is really riveting. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye now.